You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin on Civic Media. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. It's 8:06. Nice to have you back here up north on this Thursday morning, September 11th. Parker Olson is our producer down in Madison Studio A2. Brittany Merlot has the day off, and she'll be off tomorrow as well, getting into a long weekend. A foggy start to her long weekend. There's a dense fog advisory out until at least 9 o'clock for much of the western half of Wisconsin. Stick around to your local Civic Media station for your own local forecast. Let's see. Normally, it's around 7:07 in the morning, not 8:07, that we hear from Rob in Tigerton, but he pops up on YouTube now to say, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy and foggy and 58 degrees. I went to Clintonville to get supplies for my CPAP machine and had homemade pizza at my sister Lori's house in Caroline. He says, I didn't agree about the politics of Charlie Kirk, but it makes it heartbreaking that he has a wife and two very young children who will not see their father growing up. My nephew Jim passed away from cancer in 2009. He was 32 years old, married, and had a one-year-old daughter that my sister Lori was talking about. He says, we need to respect people regardless of their political beliefs. We just need to sit down and listen to one another and exchange ideas. And as to why we're only hearing from him now, he concludes with, I overslept this morning. Well, get in line, because Parker Olson has been excelling at that this week. We have a weekly planning meeting for the show here Wednesday afternoons. And, you know, we take roll call. We do take attendance. But Mr. Olson was nowhere to be found. So you'll recall that yesterday morning, he slept through his alarms and got to the station, you know, shortly before the show began. So he was, you know, he was clearly addicted to the sleep and needed more of it. Got what he could yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, it was tough. I came home early from work because I knew I was going to be working at night for Idea Fest. So I thought, I'll take a nap during the day and I'll set an alarm for our show meeting. And that alarm never happened.
You know, you have to slide the little thing over till it turns green.
And I didn't even make the alarm. I just fell asleep.
Yeah, no, but understandable. It's fodder for joshing more than anything else, because, you know, things go on. There's still somebody on the radio willing to talk. And if you're not there, and if I'm not there, Chad Holmes will step in and fill the void. We got a bunch of people who can fill the void anytime. Chad, who's never overslept in his life ever.
I overslept twice last week. And I'm not kidding you. That was like the first time in many years, and it happened twice last week. It happened the day after Labor Day. I couldn't sleep after Labor Day for some reason. I was like, I couldn't sleep. And then I look at my clock. It's about 20 minutes before I'm supposed to get up and start getting ready. And then I fell asleep. And then I woke up, and it was like I was late. And then a couple of days later, I set the alarm, because I had not been setting the alarm. I said, I got to set the alarm. I set the alarm, but I set the alarm to PM and not AM. Yes. So twice in the same week, and that was not good. Not good at all. Yep, but as you said, there's always somebody. I had fortunately had my producer here. He sat in for my segment as I hurried my way in. So there's always somebody that's willing to get in front of that microphone.
That's right. Now, you have been busy with the microphone. It is high school sports season. You got the big high school sports show as well. That was last night, correct? It's on Wednesdays?
That is correct.
All right. So you're getting set for, this will be what, week three of the high school football season?
Week four already.
Is it week four already? Wow.
Flies on by. I was saying that it gets late early in the season, because it's really the fall sports season is quick. The winter sports season is a long season. It starts just before Thanksgiving and goes into about mid-March, and you have numerous holidays that come up, and it's a long season. But boy, the football season, once it gets going, it goes by so very quickly.
Yeah, and the weather can change very quickly. We're still going to be in, I mean, it's going to be, it's foggy right now, but I sense that things are going to be borderline perfect for football tonight around Wisconsin. But, you know, a couple of more weeks of this and the folks will have the gloves out, you know, and a little heavier jacket.
I'm just glad tomorrow night's looking nice because I every week when I have a road game, I will contact the athletic director for the school that I'm going to. And I would think that this week I would have no problem because Wausau West is at DC Everest. And I happen to be the Wausau West announcer, but I happen to have to gone to school at DC Everest. And the athletic director went to Everest and graduated the year before I did. But no room in the inn for old Chad.
No room at the inn.
He's got to be. Uh-oh. He's got to sit outside tomorrow night. So I'm glad the weather is looking good.
Are you going to be on the roof or are you going to be on the sidelines?
I'm going to be at the top of the bleachers on the visitor side.
Oh, old school. The way our forefathers broadcast games from the top row of the visiting bleachers.
I tell you, because there have been nights where I've had either dealing with cold and wind or rain, and those are bad nights. Those are because you don't protect yourself. You protect the equipment.
Exactly.
The equipment is worth more than yours. That's what I've been told.
Exactly.
Yes, many a time.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can be replaced. The equipment can't. Yep. So sacrifice the body if need be.
Hey, Pat, you asked me before the show if I want to talk about something. I'm going to talk about something positive here because it's been a – you depressed me when you read Derek Van Orden's
tweets last hour. Yeah, I was just going to read a couple, and I realized he had he'd put in dozens.
I'm going to tie it in here.
All right.
It got me thinking a little bit because leadership is important, and we don't see very often where there's an opportunity to do, I think, what's right for a community or a country or anything like that. And this week it was, I don't know if I say I get surprised all that often, but I got surprised. It was actually late last week when it came down, like on Friday, that the mayor of Wausau, Doug Denny, who we've talked about quite a bit and at times have been critical of, and this week I said, hey, the mayor did something I think is positive for this community, and it was nominating the former mayor, and then the council a couple of nights ago approved it, Katie Rosenberg, to a position, a citizen position, on the Police and Fire Commission. And it sounds like a simple thing to do, but many of the folks that provided the financial support and provided the votes that got Doug Denny into office just over a year ago, I'm certain we're not pleased that he would do anything for Katie Rosenberg. Katie Rosenberg is much loved by many, but also, as you probably well know, is not well liked by many as well on the right. So I give credit to the mayor of Wausau, no matter how this occurred. I don't know how this actually went up from what I've heard and read, that Katie Rosenberg did it the old-fashioned way. She didn't make a call to City Hall. She went to the City of Wausau website, which is how any of the citizens can go and apply for a position at one of the citizen positions on these commissions. She put in, she filled out the application, you know, and under what experiences that she may have that would be good for this position. Former mayor is a pretty good one.
Yeah.
But I do give the mayor of Wausau credit for doing something that is bipartisan. And I said yesterday when I made a little commentary about this, about I'm not a big fan of just throwing out the word bipartisan. And I think you may have mentioned this in recent weeks, talking about the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, which was sort of an empty statement because it was an infrastructure act that was pushed through by President Joe Biden and the Democrats, maybe with a couple of stray votes here or there, but it was not a bipartisan infrastructure act. It was an infrastructure act that was pushed through by the Democrats that had the power of the majority in both the Congress and in the White House at the time. So using the term bipartisan in an empty way, I am not a big fan of. Mm-hmm. But in this case, I felt as though this was something that was bipartisan. It was a mayor from one political persuasion saying that this person of another political persuasion, a political adversary in recent years, is somebody that can be useful on this commission. So you find those, you have to applaud it and you have to spotlight it because it's real.
It is sadly rare. I mean, just that gesture alone only draws a deeper contrast with Republicans running the Wisconsin legislature who have fired all manner of public servants by not approving their nominations. Their members that they have fired from the Board of Regents and other commissions who were fellow legislators. And while you don't owe them the courtesy, you also should maybe be able to rise above your bitter partisanship when you're looking at the people who are serving. So again, you're being glass half full here, and I'm calling attention to the half empty part of it, but only because this is the world we live in now, that we have to call such attention to things that we used to take for granted because they are now the exception to a rule that is very much, you know, crush your enemies rather than have polite disagreements.
Well, and the thing about it is that, frankly, this morning, that's kind of the way I feel, in that we've all been, I mean, today's the anniversary of 9/11, and mm-hmm. that's just one of the tragic events that have occurred in the course of American history and world history. And in these circumstances, and I would say that in the aftermath of a political assassination, you would look for leadership. And again, that's why I say leadership is important. When you hear what you said about, you know, your reading of those social media posts of Derek Van Orden, when you listen to what Donald Trump said in the Oval Office yesterday, it makes me wonder, what is the road path to any sort of engagement in coming together in fixing problems? Because I don't see any roadmap where Derek Van Orden is going to be a positive influence in fixing the overarching issue, which is, of course, the idea of violence in our political system. I guess I should go back and look. I can't imagine Derek Van Orden was this outraged when Melissa Hortman and her husband were assassinated.
Made kind of a lighthearted dig at Governor Tim Walz, you know, based on politics, based on a mistaken belief about the suspect. So no, there was not something that came in kind from the congressman from Western Wisconsin. But again, he's talking to a particular constituency, not looking to bring people together. There is, you know, the comment sections have become, you know, just a bit of a cesspool today. One that came in just minutes ago saying, "You guys preach just as much hate as others. You're absolutely disgusting clowns."
So sure, this guy, sure, hey, let me jump in real fast.
Yeah.
If this gentleman is out there listening right now, is he admitting that, oh, we promote hate, but you guys do it as well?
If you're saying just as much,
but that's what he says. We may promote hate, but you guys do it too. Is that the high ground that this guy wants to stand on? I don't think that's really high ground.
I think that is a very excellent point to wrap up that part of the discussion and to get us back to sports here. From Chris in Appleton, who I believe is State Senator Kristen Dassler-Alfine, says, "I'll cheer for an evergreen win to keep you warm."
She and I graduated the same year.
I did not know that.
Everest.
Oh.
So, yeah. So when she won, I was very happy. When she ran and came up just short, I was very unhappy. And I think that she is a wonderful public servant. And when I talk about, you know, what I just said about Derek Van Orden, you talk about somebody that will see a problem and try to work to a good solution. That's Kristen Dassler-Alfine. And as I like to say, some of us who graduated in the DC Evers class of 89 have done great things, and other of us are talking on the radio.
Chad Holmes, catch him on 98.9 WXCO in Wausau. Thank you, Chad. We'll talk to you later.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll have Sean O'Malley talking about the opening bell and Joe Zepecki yet here. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Once again, we got football tonight. The Green Bay Packers taking on the Washington Commanders at Lambeau Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 5 o'clock on stations around the Civic Media Radio Network. If you need more football, you've got the Badgers heading to Alabama. And what did Parker say? 20.5 point underdogs. That's why you listen to the games, because there's always the chance for that big upset. And Alabama, not the team they used to be. Coverage begins Saturday at 9 a.m. on some of the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network. And the Brewers, meanwhile, they are off today. They have a series at home against the St. Louis Cardinals beginning tomorrow, pregame at 6:35. Let's talk about your money in the markets now with Sean O'Malley. And we're going to start, Sean, good morning, by talking about employment. How else to put this? Soft. This is soft the right word? If we were playing
extremely soft is the right word. Soft go. And being revised as softer. There is a lot to report on that's happened in the last week here with respect to employment. First, we had non-farm payroll for August. Only 22,000 jobs were added. That is incredibly soft. Remember, I said anything below 100 is really kind of just treading water. So we are no longer treading water on a monthly basis there. But we also had some revisions. There were two right away with Friday's announcement. They revised July's numbers. Now, July's numbers actually went up by 6,000 to 79,000. So that was the good news. The bad news was that June's numbers were revised downward by 27,000 to negative 13,000 jobs for that month. That means that for the past 4 months reported, May, June, July, and August, the grand total of jobs, not in each month, but total across all 4 months, is 107,000 jobs. That is incredibly soft. But then, adding insult to injury this week, we had another revision, downward, of course, going prior to March of 2025 for the 12 months prior, and it was revised down by an aggregate 911,000 jobs. So almost a million jobs that just we thought they happened, but they didn't.
Which, by the way, is a normal part of the process. I know the process appears to be tainted after Trump fired, you know, the person from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But again, the numbers here, they don't lie. And what they do is they say, look, even going back to the final year of the Biden administration, that things were a little softer than expected. You start by getting, you know, the estimated amount of hiring, but then later on you go back and check what were the actual numbers of hiring, and that's the revision downward that we're talking about, right?
Correct. That's right. It's a little bit of a different impact because in that final 12 months, the Biden administration and the first part of the Trump administration, the job ads were, you know, I'd say around 175,000 per month. In aggregate. So, okay, you basically lost 75 of those. So you're down to about 100, maybe a little over that on average per month. But that's a lot healthier picture than what you're looking at 4 months total with a very similar number.
Yes. I mean, soft then, amazingly soft due to recent events. And right. That would include things that continue growing the trade deficit, which, again, the new president said he was going to address. But the trade deficit is there's still a lot of work to do, shall we say.
Yeah. Well, and don't forget, that was the original excuse for putting the tariffs in place. So what's happening is that we're sort of seeing, instead of trying to use the tariffs to control the trade deficit is fluctuating wildly when the tariffs go on and off. So one of the big reasons we saw this July trade deficit being much larger than forecasted, it was $78.3 billion on expectations of $64.2 billion. So that's a 32.5% increase. And the reason is that businesses were scrambling to stockpile goods as the August tariffs were coming into effect. So basically what's happening is that businesses, being rational people and run by rational people, when they find out the tariffs are coming, they're going to order a bunch of inventory in advance before the tariffs hit, and then just sort of go, you know, on life support with the after tariff environment, hoping that they will eventually be lifted and their business will be able to continue.
Instead, like you said, we continue to have the scrambling, and you have farmers that are impacted by these tariffs. Before we get ahead of ourselves and people start talking about, you know, bailouts and things like that, we have to look at the numbers as they are. And anybody involved in, you know, corn and soybeans and rice and so forth, these have not been easy times for them.
No, no. I mean, you've seen a lot of news stories out there about how a lot of these farmers in various states are, you know, they're having these prayer vigils that, you know, that something will come and help them and save them, because unfortunately the economic environment is not in their favor. Costs have gone up. We've talked about those. Fertilizer, fuel, seeds have all gone up. And part of the problem with the tariffs is that it's not just that it's more expensive necessarily due to counter tariffs to go and sell U.S. agricultural goods overseas. But in some cases, some countries are just boycotting the U.S. products entirely. Case in point is soybean farmers in the U.S. Normally, last year, they sold $12.8 billion of soybeans to China. Now, that soybean sales period is usually September to January. So some of them should have been occurring already. To date, zero. Not a single one. We'll see if that reverses itself, but it's not a good omen.
Again, for folks that might have missed it, last year, in the last season, China purchasing $12.8 billion in soybeans from the U.S. So far in this season, the number is zero. And that's going to sting in some way, shape, or form. And if it includes, you know, bailout checks to farmers, that may make them whole or nearly whole. But all that does is drive up the deficits. We're talking to Sean O'Malley about your money and the markets. We'll have a little bit more after the opening bell in just a sec. And then we will talk to Joe Zepecki about some of the headlines in the news as well. Remember, you can sign up for our newsletters, plural. We've got a couple of them. Head over to our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Hit subscribe up in the top banner. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a couple of newsletters for you to consider subscribing to if you're not already. From Courier Newsroom's Cam Stevenson, who's now our correspondent on Capitol Hill, is Below the Beltway, his daily newsletter that you can find at beltway.news or couriernewsroom.com. And a little closer to home, if you're not already subscribing to my Sunday morning newsletter, looking at the week's political headlines, get on over to upnorthnewswi.com, click subscribe in the top banner. It includes our question of the week, and this week, what caused Donald Trump's flip-flop on releasing the Epstein files? Did he see that he was named in there in a more damaging way that he had expected? Is he protecting somebody? Is he blackmailing somebody? Or is it all a hoax, as he claims? The first people to get to answer that are the folks that subscribe to our Sunday morning newsletter, upnorthnewswi.com. All right, let's get back in touch with Sean O'Malley here, who is a financial compliance, data governance, and risk management expert. He's a Hudson native, certified anti-money laundering specialist. He has worked with Citigroup, Ford Motor Credit, Deloitte & Touche, Morgan Stanley, and many more. And he is, we are very honored to have him following some of the economic indicators for us. And Sean, as we talk about stagflation, the combination of inflation, higher inflation and lower employment, where are the new inflation figures showing us where we're at?
Well, Pat, the good news is they're right along with forecast expectations, but the bad news is it's up.
Okay.
So inflation continues to track upwards. So regular CPI was reported at 2.9%. Up from 2.7 in July. So that's definitely tracking upwards, moving sort of in line with what we're seeing with the personal consumption expenditure index, which is the one that the Fed actually watches more than the CPI. Core CPI, though, showed something interesting. It was up 3.1%. And one of the references there was that we're seeing higher food costs. And I'm sure a lot of people can attest to that based on their grocery bills. This is something that affects really everybody. So that's, you know, that's a troubling sign. We don't like to see food costs going up substantially due to the impact that has on the everyday U.S. consumer. But the fact is, that's sort of what's happening right now.
So we've got to pick up where we were last week with Harry Truman and the One-Handed Economist. When we talk about the Federal Reserve and the next meeting about, you know, on the one hand, looking at inflation, or on the other hand, looking at jobs, what are their choices, A and B here, when it comes to emphasizing one or the other?
Right. So if you want to combat inflation, you need to raise interest rates. If you want to combat low employment or soft employment, you've got to lower interest rates. Can't do both. So the Fed has a Fed Open Market Committee meeting next week on the 16th and 17th. We'll find out what happens. However, I can tell you based on, the secondary revision downward of the, 911,000 jobs down from up to and including March of 2025, that the odds makers are saying that the odds of a larger cut, more than just 25 basis points, which is 0.25%, they're saying the odds of going and having a 0.5% reduction have gone up due to the softer employment numbers. So clearly the market is expecting that the Federal Reserve will cut rates and address the employment situation rather than the inflation situation.
And of course, lead to all kinds of speculation about the political pressure coming from the White House as well. Sean O'Malley with your money in the markets after the opening bell. Sean, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Take care, Pat.
All right. Again, a reminder, the Packers are playing tonight. And if you have a tough time finding the game on Amazon Prime or wherever it is here, you should catch it on the radio. Several civic media stations have it. Pre-game coverage beginning at 5 o'clock. 8:39 now the time. And let's bring in Joe Zepecki. And today is not our best day. It's 9/11, and there's a lot to say about that. There was, of course, a political murder yesterday in Utah, and then even closer to home, I have been where Joe and Melissa are, and that is having to say goodbye to a cherished family pet. My condolences, Joe. I know that this is not easy. And maybe you didn't even want to talk about it on the radio, but I just wanted to say for all of us who've had to be in your shoes that we're thinking of you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And it's a terrible, terrible week, basically any way you slice it.
Yeah.
At home, in this country, thinking about, those lives lost 24 years ago. This is not where anybody wants to be, but we're going to do our best because it is important that we talk about all of this stuff and hopefully make people smarter and give them some perspective and on at least two of those three things, two of those three tragedies, I'm prepared to offer some perspective of my own.
See, this is why it's always tough to come up with follow-up questions for you, because you say it all right the first time, that we need to talk through this and hope that people are a little smarter and get a little bit more perspective as a result of this. And, the overarching theme needs to be and should be that political violence is never the answer. Violence is not politics. All of that. That should be the overarching theme that unites people across the political spectrum. Unfortunately, I thought we were going to spend a lot of time talking like that.
Yeah.
But the fact that you have people who are stoking this, who are driving the wedge deeper in the results, and it's not just the usual trolls and keyboard warriors. Okay. I could tolerate that. We've had a lot of them in the sandbox this morning who want to throw a fistful of sand and, somehow that makes them feel better. It shouldn't, but that's who they are. But one of them is a member of Congress from Wisconsin, and Derek Van Orden's dozens of tweets, stoking division, talking up violence and civil war, everything he pretends not to be when he's getting all this fluffy coverage from too many local media outlets, can't go without mention. He's not just another troll, Joe. This is somebody who his communication should be concerning to not just every voter in the 3rd Congressional District, but every person living in the 3rd District and in Wisconsin overall.
Yes, it is not appropriate. And I think the best way to approach comments like Mr. Van Orden's yesterday or Congresswoman Nancy Mace's is to try to show a little grace. And how I will choose to do that is to offer some perspective on how I have felt some of the other instances and occasions of political violence, going back to the attempted assassination of Gabby Giffords, a Democratic congresswoman from Arizona. Almost everybody knows her story, so we won't go through all of that. And as I was thinking about yesterday and having some pretty raw conversations, including with Republicans in my life, when something like this happens and you are in the political world in the way that members of Congress are, or in the way that I and my wife are, you lose some of the remove, and it feels like it is something that has happened to you, and you have to grapple with the potential that something like this could happen, not just to you directly, but someone you love or someone you know. And I say that as someone who got a voicemail from a distant, you know, a family member, not somebody I'm super close with and see all the time, but who was like, hey, I know you're out there, and I just want you to know I'm thinking about you. And when emotions are raw, people are not at their best. I'm not at my best this week because of what we've lost in our own home. And so rather than descend further down that spiral of darkness that Dr. King talked about, the descending spiral of violence, I just think we have to try to show grace. I don't think Derek Van Orden thinks that the flag has dropped on the next civil war in this country. I think that he and people who are in the MAGA movement are feeling personally attacked and like it is something that has happened to them. And that is true. At the same time, it is true that we live in politically violent times, and it's the work of all of us, from, you know, organizers and activists to elected officials to our broader society. We have to find our way out of this. We have before. When you think about the length of time when Dr. King and President Kennedy and Senator Bobby Kennedy were all gunned down, that was an incredibly turbulent time in America, not just in our politics, but in our society and in our culture. And we found a way through it. And maybe the best thing we can do today is stop pretending that we don't live in politically violent times. We do. Gabby Giffords, Steve Scalise, Paul Pelosi, State Senator Melissa Homan, now Charlie Kirk, January 6th. These are politically violent times. And it is now the work of a generation to move beyond it, to remember that as much as I disagreed with almost everything that Charlie Kirk ever said on the platforms he had and how vehemently I disagree with his worldview, no American should ever face physical violence, much less murder, for what they believe. And maybe that's how we get past it and move forward, is just say, this is not about we can't get to a period of political violence. We're in one. Mm-hmm. And now we got to get out of it. And we have to recognize each other's humanity, not just at the micro level, but at the macro. Every American and everyone who aspires to be American and every fellow citizen of the world has some basic rights to live freely. And we as Americans should be on the side of, we want more people in more places around the world to enjoy the freedoms that this country has for a very long time, including the right to free speech. And so I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's how I'm thinking about this today is, okay, we're here. Now we got to get out of here.
Oh, we do. And there is no... there is no way but forward. You can't sit and dwell on this because we don't. We have moved along since 9/11, while not forgetting. We have moved on since Columbine, not forgetting, but saying, well, the next day is here. What are we going to do with this next day? Charlie Kirk was one of, on average, 300 people shot every day in America, every day. And about 125 people in this country every day die from gun violence. Setting aside the political notion of this, and you know that is the larger issue here, but we are a nation that is essentially figuratively under the gun and need to remind ourselves that Charlie Kirk was one of about 125 people murdered by guns yesterday, and that that discussion is not going to go away, nor is this daily list of carnage until some of our conversations turn to how can we reduce this? How can we work together to reduce this? We're not going to agree on everything, but we got to find something. And I've left you all of 30 seconds here to give me your best answer.
Well, let's look to the helpers. Let's look to the people who are trying to make a positive impact, including some Wisconsin Democrats who, in memory of the late Jonathan Brostoff, are advancing legislation that would allow people to put themselves on a do not sell firearms list. That is legislation that I think even the strongest Second Amendment proponent would say somebody can self, you know, say, don't sell me a gun for a year. I'm not in a great place. That doesn't solve all of this, but it gets us more focused on solutions rather than the awfulness of the problem.
It is a step. More with Joe Zepecki and some final news and notes from Lake Wissota coming up. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Coming up next, Matt Nair on air, Greg Bach in, while Jane continues a little break here. Greg's guests include former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area. And Jim Santel will, of course, join us tomorrow as our usual Week in Review panel coming up in the 7 o'clock hour tomorrow. All right, little point of personal privilege here, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Joe Zepecki. If you did not catch the very first part of the show today, that is where I shared my feelings on Charlie Kirk and his murder yesterday, and letting the record show that I am beyond angry at the idiot who committed this crime. He or she did not have permission to take a life, no matter how much you disagreed with that person. And I disagreed with this person a lot, and I put it all out there. Just after 6 o'clock this morning, because before anybody goes and turns somebody into a martyr, let's make clear what the record showed about Charlie Kirk. And then it makes it that much more upsetting to say the way to address that is not through a bullet, but through ballots. And we've had that theme today and throughout the day, I'm sure. But if you missed that and want to listen back, you can catch the 6 a.m. hour either through the Civic Media website or follow the program on Spotify or on Apple. We're going to turn our discussion now to 9/11 and commemorate that with just some memories and remembering the sacrifices and the souls that were lost. Joe, I'll go first and say that on September 11th, 2001, I was actually sleeping in because I was anchoring the 6 and 10 o'clock news. And so I got a call from a friend and coworker saying, turn on your TV. And at that point, I just could not take my eyes off the screen for about 2.5 hours. Right, shortly after the second building collapsed, and the phone rang, and it was my news director saying, you better come in. And we started doing live local updates because, remember, at the time, nobody knew. Nobody knew how many planes there were. Nobody knew that this was pretty much restricted to Washington, D.C. and Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and also to, you know, New York City. We didn't know. So there were local updates throughout, and we were on air until just after midnight, and we signed off and got in my car and cried like a baby. It was just such an anguishing day, and I don't know your memories at all, but I did want to give you a chance to share either memories or observations.
I was a student at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater on 9/11. The summer just before, I had been an intern on Capitol Hill, and I think some of what I remember of that day informs how I'm feeling today in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination and what I said, that there are folks who feel like it happened to them. And as someone who had been on Capitol Hill every day going to work during the summer, and that, you know, as throughout the day, as we didn't know if more planes were headed to the Capitol or other parts of DC, it was terrifying. And there's an Alan Jackson song, you know, asking, what did you do? I called my mom. I was that sophomore in college who fell asleep watching CNN at night. Spoiler alert, I've been a nerd for a very long time. And when somebody in the hallway was banging on doors and telling people to turn on the TV, I turned it on just as the second tower was hit. And it's a day that it's hard to put into words what it has meant for this country. But this morning, I am certainly, and maybe there's a through line and a theme here, thinking about the helpers, thinking about the heroes, whether it's Todd Beamer and the crew of Flight 93, who saved untold lives by storming the cockpit, whether it's the man in the red bandana who raced into the World Trade Center to help people get out, whether it's the 343 New York City firefighters who knew as they went back in that they might not come out. And there have always been people who are willing to do the right thing and try to help others, even when the odds are against you. And maybe that's the way we have to connect what happened yesterday with what happened 24 years ago, is we all need to remember that sometimes it's pretty easy. There's a right and a wrong, and helping your fellow man and woman, being somebody who does the right thing and tries to be of service to others, is something that we can all do. The heroes of 9/11 were not politicians. They were ordinary folks trying to live their version of the American dream. And may all of those lives lost memories remain a blessing. And, you know, may we all get through all of these dark, scary times into a brighter future.
And let's just all be better to each other. And to that end, on the text line from Tiffany in River Falls, Joe, sending love to you and your family as we have recently gone through the loss of a dog. Thank you for keeping us grounded during these difficult times. And again, it's just nice to see. It's nice to see the shreds of humanity, which are necessary, because I think we're doing a disservice if we don't point out the instances that, you know, endanger our peace and our unity. And that sounds divisive, but let me reemphasize, calling out somebody else's divisiveness is not divisive. Calling out somebody else's racism is not racist. Calling out somebody else's sexism is not sexist. Let us look for those ways that we can be better to one another without overlooking the shortcomings and the challenges ahead of us. And I think it's just more dialogue, Joe, with people like you that are going to get us there.
I hope it helps in some small way.
Yep.
Appreciate you, my friend.
I appreciate you as well, sir. Thank you very much. Take care. Have a good day out there. And thanks to all of you for being here with us as well. Again, Matt and Air on Air coming up next. Greg Bach in, and then Todd Alba at 2 o'clock, and so much more all across the Civic Media Radio Network. And we will do this again tomorrow morning here up north, bright and early at 6 a.m. In the meantime, follow what we do over at UpNorthNewsWI.com. Sign up for our newsletters. And remember, you can pod this program anytime as well. Have a great day.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.